This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
I have a Marriott Rewards card, and that's what I buy like everything on.
And Brock Rom.
My Delta status is so good right now. I pretty much get upgraded to first class every flight.
So we spent about 20 minutes before this episode trying to figure out what we were going to talk about. Good thing is, it turned into an honest conversation about the sports industry and how we can better support each other and seek out better approaches to communication and feedback.
Cool. We want to clap?
Yep.
Let's clap at 42. Nope. Let's clap at 52. It's too long. Way too long. Clapped.
Let's cut that out. Let's cut all this out. Cut this part out. Whoever's editing this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I think we have enough to make something.
I think we nailed it.
Tell us how you really feel.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
All right, guys. Well, it's great to see both of you here. It's been a while since we've all three been on a cast here on the show, and it's good to catch up and hear about what you guys have been up to and what's going on, and we'll take a little tour around things that are going on in this crossover season. So Brock, let's start with you. What have you been up to in the last couple weeks?
Last couple weeks, basically, for me, it's been since July. I've been working on building a control room facility at the PNC Arena, which is the houses of Carolina Hurricanes and NC State basketball. We're on the back end of that. So, crossover season affects me a little bit in the sense that, I have a client who is switching back and forth between basketball and hockey sometimes on the same day, right? And anybody who's flipped a control room before on it from an engineering standpoint knows that flipping from show to show, there's nuances with that, and especially in a new room, you kind of got to figure out your practices and procedures. So doing that has kind of pulled me back in a little bit to what crossover season's like in a college level. Not quite, or on a pro level, I get a little taste of it here and there.
I know you've been traveling too. What's the state of travel these days with COVID and everything going on there?
It's just normal. Like, it's just totally normal. It's been normal for, I would say, I don't know when it happened. It was about a year ago. And Garrett, I'm sure you've seen this too. Like, there was just a changeover when everybody was just like, okay, everybody's traveling again. And it was kind of back to normal. And now recently it's been insane. I don't know what totally has changed, and we're coming up on the holidays, but, I live in Austin. I fly out of Austin Bergstrom Airport, which is a really nice airport, really easy to fly in and out of. But, the TSA lines have been insanely long. It kind of started after the Formula One race happened here. And my mother was actually flying out the day after the Formula One race happened. Not that she went to it, but she was just visiting and then flying out the next day.
That is some bad timing.
They literally said, you need to get to the airport 3 hours before your flight. And she did. And it took her 2 hours to get through security, which is insane. I travel so much. I have TSA pre-check and clear. It's pretty essential if you travel a ton for work.
Oh my God. Yes. Get it. If you travel twice a year, it's like the most worth it thing in the world. It's $85 for 5 years. Like,
it's just TSA pre is $85 for 5 years.
It clears what, 100?
Yeah. I get it through my credit card.
That makes sense.
Through it. But it's so, even if I didn't, it's so worth it. Cause even the TSA pre-check line, when I went through the other day, was like so freaking long and I just got to skip that. But it travel is just, it's just normal now. But the problem is the infrastructure isn't quite back to normal.
Yep.
Rental cars can be really hard to get sometimes. It's a total crapshoot when I run through, my company runs through National, which is nice because you just walk up and take your car and go. But sometimes it seems a crapshoot. You walk up and there's either like 100 cars on the lot, or literally the other day when I showed up, there was one car on the lot. Not even kidding. Just one car.
I've tried to reserve. A lot of my travel happens like 2 to 3 days out. I book my travel. Like it can just be a little short notice stuff. And like there have been times we booked through National too. And there have been times I've had to book through Hertz because National literally did not have cars where I was mm-hmm. going. Like nothing was available. And it's wild. And I do agree with you. Like I didn't start traveling again until this summer. It was July was the first time I got back out on the road for work since the pandemic hit. And I mean, it wasn't bad this summer. It felt like, you know, mostly back to normal, maybe 80-90% for me. And then like, as far as what I'd seen and over the last probably month, I feel like it's busy, like it's holiday season busy already mm-hmm. over the last month. And I think to your point, it probably has, you know, we're video guys talking out of our ass, but has a lot to do with, you know, the infrastructure not quite being back in place. At least it doesn't feel like it because the lines are longer. I feel like I'm seeing less people. Like this is just dorky, hey, we travel a lot talk, which I love. But yeah, I mean, it's wild traveling again for work, how much it's back to normal and even busier it feels like than what normal used to be, mm-hmm. which means the holidays are just going to be even more of a train wreck than usual.
I am so happy we are driving for our Thanksgiving plans. We are driving for our Christmas plans. Anybody who needs to travel via plane, just build in that extra time because I think it's going to be absolutely nuts.
And for the love of God, get TSA pre.
Oh, it's so worth it.
You think any of that stuff, I guess maybe a transition there, is any of that stuff transfer to work shortages of people? Like,
it's a good question.
Something that I think a lot of people in our industry are experiencing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that is being talked about across the country. I don't think it's just our industry by any means, but like, honestly, I think where you're seeing it is jobs that are very labor intensive and wages have been, you know, maybe, you know, pressed down. They don't meet what the expectation actually is. And I think after the pandemic, a lot of people took a look and said like, oh, I don't know why I've been working this hard for so little for so long, like when I could go make more money doing something mm-hmm. else. And I think that applies at, you know, McDonald's and Target as much as it applies in our industry. Like I think that our industry is a massively underpaid industry for what is expected, especially in sports, because of, you know, just the fact that I think people have always said like, oh, they're, you know, if this person leaves, if we're not paying them enough and they leave, like there's 20 someone people that want that job, you know, like, and I think you're seeing the fruits of that. I mean, you know, come home. Like I think you're seeing that was always the expectation and that's kind of the model the industry was built on to some extent. And now that people are saying, oh, maybe working, you know, 70 hours for 35 grand isn't what I want to do my whole life. Like they're realizing that, oh, we can't just continue this labor practice and, you know, expect to have people in the stable, like lining up for this job. Like it just, people are prioritizing mental health. People are prioritizing their time with family, with friends, with like, priorities changed, I think, pretty heavily over this pandemic. And I think
the job market's changed, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's changed, you know, I would love to have, I guess, I don't know who the sports creative industry analysis would be on this, who would have the perspective, maybe somebody from Teamwork Online or something. But even just in our niche of the world in sports creative and sports tech, job postings are way up. Everybody's hiring. And I know we struggle with it at Beck. And I know a lot of people are. It's hard to find people because there are so many jobs and there's good jobs and there's opportunities to work remote. There's opportunities for better pay. There's opportunities for better benefits. So if people can be picky and choosy with their jobs, you know, those employers are going to lose out who are not keeping up with that. And I think it's, you know, I saw a tweet, we were talking a little bit before the show, different tweet from Daryl Miles. I forget who he was amplifying. But somebody talked about the sports.
Oh, Chanel Smith Walker.
It was Chanel. Yeah. About the burnout that she had at an employer and talking to him and basically saying like, well, that's the way sports is, right? And I think all three of us have heard that at some point in time, right? In our careers as one way, shape or form. But that doesn't make it right, you know, and I hope what this does is it keeps, I hope people realize that if their time is being exploited, if you're a salary employee and you're working 80 to 100 hours a week in sports, that people kind of realize that it doesn't have to be this way. And there are other jobs out there and there are other employers who are going to, you know, hopefully treat their employees better. So yeah, hopefully some positive comes from this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you kind of, you know, hit on it there too, where it's not just that, you know, people are leaving the industry or whatever because they're unhappy. I think that there's also just, you know, what you said, a lot of jobs that are being opened up. I think people are just continuing to invest in content and continuing to understand that. I mean, you look at the schools and the teams that have a really strong content model, and they're the ones that are, you know, doing pretty well online as far as the engagement numbers and all those things that lead to revenue in theory. You know, some of those ROIs are hard to, you know, calculate, but I mean, you can do it straight from, you know, in an advertising model, what you're able to sell as far as ads, pre-roll, sponsors, etc. But like, you know, in theory, just even in the engagement rates, hopefully leading to, you know, things as simple as, you know, ticket buying and, you know, merch buying, some things that are just like, you know, fan loyalty that leads to revenue down the road. But like, you know, you're seeing that people are understanding that content is a key part of that and trying to build their teams out. And I think it's honestly, it's the same thing that I, you know, I worked at ESPN right out of school and even did an internship there in college. And, you know, in the 2 years between my internship and right out of school, one of the things that happened was like MLB Network took off. NBA TV started adding positions, you know, NFL Network became a real thing in that kind of like 2000, you know, 7 to 2010 range. And like all of a sudden people that were like PAs that had been stuck in like these entry-level roles at ESPN for 6 years were all of a sudden like associate producers at these other networks. Like when you have a glut of positions that open up like that, it encourages competition and it made ESPN like fight to keep people. Like it made them like all of a sudden people were getting promoted that hadn't been promoted for years, both because the number of openings that existed and, you know, them realizing like we can't keep suppressing this talent anymore. We've got to move them up and like give them raises, give them position, you know, promotions, or else they are going to leave and they're talented and we don't want them to. And I think that's just what you're seeing at, you know, not only the college level, but the pro level, you know, the kind of in-house team level is starting to do the same, where more positions are opening up because people are seeing, you know, the value of content. And, you know, because of that, everyone else has to up their game. Like it's supply and demand at some point. And, you know, not only is supply gone down or stayed flat as far as creatives, like wanting to be in this industry, despite the burnout, it, you know, demand's gone up and, you know, something's got to give.
Brock, I think you brought up something that was interesting too, talking about remote work. I've heard a more increasing number of people who have been able to take on jobs remotely, where, you know, our industry has essentially been built on this idea of you live in the place where you work because there's games and different events and all this kind of stuff that you have to be there in person for. I'm just curious to get your perspective, whether it's IP capabilities within live workflows or something like that, that maybe is opening up more opportunities for people to not only pick and choose where they want to work and live, but working with who they want to work with in an arena that is, you know, sometimes their house.
Yeah. I know TDs, directors, producers who have ran replay operators who have ran shows. I'm speaking strictly from the live side right now, who have ran shows out of their house. You know, people with, with EVS or replay controllers sitting in a monitor, the multi-viewer that's coming back over SRT, you know, the infrastructure works. The infrastructure is there. Is it the most intuitive thing to set up? Not all the time, but it can be done, and it's getting easier and easier every day. Unity with Intercom has really kind of changed that game with their cloud service, or you can run a service on your own with a public static IP and get stuff back. Editing on the other side has been really good too. I mean, tools like Parsec for editing on remote stations that are more powerful than your local station. I know lots of editors using Parsec. Obviously, there's tons of different content sharing platforms, whether you're running like a CatDV proxy server yourself, you know, in your office and then sharing out that content, or you're doing, you know, something else like Frame.io or something. I'm less versed on that stuff. I haven't kept up with it as much lately since I haven't had to work in it, you know. But there are services out there to share and deliver that media. Obviously, there's some things you have to do in person. You can't shoot remotely, right? Like somebody has to shoot the game, right? Like somebody has to set up cameras on the live side. Somebody has to set up that infrastructure. But I'd say especially on the creative side, like if your job is editor and storyteller, you know, or the like, you can, there's a lot of work you can do remote, maybe not all of it, but you know, I think you're right. I think there's a mental hurdle that managers at a team level would have to get over, right? Of like, well, the games are here and you have to be here. And that's a tough balance, 'cause you are going to have staff that have to be there. As somebody who's more on the live and especially engineering side, I a lot of times have to be there, you know? But I think those opportunities are good. And I think that opportunity allows you to get better talent, right? Because the talent you want may not want to move to where you are. And no offense to some colleges that are in not great towns to live in, or, you know, maybe their family isn't close. Maybe they can't move for reasons, you know, that there's a lot of different reasons. But if you still want that talent, you're going to make that concession to get it.
I think it's all about, you know, just rethinking how we build teams, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of teams right now that have, you know, it's producer, shooter, editor, you're doing a little bit of everything. Whereas if you wanted to open up your flexibility to, you know, an editor only position or a producer only position, like, you know, do features and stories and graphics and those things, and like have a very specific, you know, shooter, cinematographer position that had to be there, and then the rest of your team could be remote. Like it just really forces you to rethink how you build your teams. And I don't think a lot of people are going to do that, to be completely honest. Like, I just don't think that's in the cards at a major level. I think everyone's expecting that, you know, either to eventually get back to a hybrid or, you know, full team on site, you know, full time again at some point. But you're right. I mean, the possibilities exist where, you know, like just using University of Minnesota, where I was, for example, like if you had a position there where, you know, you had someone shooting the games and shooting the interviews, shooting like whatever you needed to shoot, and that was their sole job, like literally everyone else could probably be remote. You know, if their job was only to put those things together, to do the storytelling, to do the, you know, the graphics for that stuff, to do the editing, like you could literally have a one or two person cinematographer team on site and everyone else remote, which won't happen. And again, I just use that as like, you know, somewhere I've been and somewhere I've seen where you could do it that way. But I don't see a lot of people going to that model, but I think it's there if people were open to it and, you know, progressive in their mindset of how to get it done. But it realistically probably difficult and just a little too non-traditional for most people to maybe pull the trigger on.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have what I like to call an always on the road mindset. So like heading into this, we like it where you were just talking about, Brock, had the capability, and we've had to reinforce that capability of accessing our content remotely and changing the mindset of who needs to be where and when. And, you know, is it worth spending a couple hours in the car on the way to a certain location in your day versus getting work done from wherever you are? So I think, it's interesting that mindset, like Garrett, what you just kind of wrapped with, that like the mindset kind of going back to what it was before the pandemic. And I'm just curious to see how that all plays out, how flexible people will become and how much this has changed people's perspectives and how they can approach the talent, especially from hearing different people say that they feel like they have a hard time getting talent in the door.
I will tell you that is our number one issue right now as a company, is getting talent in the door. And I know we're not the only ones facing it. It's a real issue for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I know we've talked before about the technology side of this business being a side that's really had quite a bit of growth and opportunity. And, you know, training wise, I guess, Brock, what you've touched on this in a different episode, but what are the areas in which you think people who are entering this area, entering the broadcast field, could explore on their own time to help build up their own chops and prepare themselves to be able to help fill some of the gaps or the roles?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on in my career, my career as a manager, when I started hiring people, I think the biggest thing I realized is I'm hiring people over skill sets. And I still think that's true during this.
Yep.
I think our industry is so complex and so diverse and in knowledge base, right? There's so much that nobody can know all of it, right? You could be looking for one specific thing. Like if you're looking for like a media asset manager, somebody who knows Reach Engine or Cat TV or something like that, it's a specific skill that you're going to need. But looking for a general producer type role, even looking for somebody on my side of things from an engineering standpoint, I would rather hire somebody with less experience who has a better attitude, better work ethic, and better problem solving skills, right? In the want and the ability to learn, because so much in this industry is learnable, right? There aren't a ton of degrees that really pertain heavily to what we do. You know, on the producer side, obviously a film degree helps a lot, journalism degree helps a lot. Definitely doesn't hurt, but I'm speaking more on the tech side of things, right? I think a lot of that is a super learnable skill that's going to evolve over your career anyway. Like the way we're doing things, and again, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I started shooting on Betacam SP, you know, like it doesn't exist anymore, right? So like I could know everything inside and out about Betacam SP workflows. And that's good, and it's going to help me in future workflows, but it changes, right? So, I think that still rings true, is I'm all about hiring people, not skills.
Yeah. I mean, adaptability and problem solving like is everything there. Like when you're talking about those, you know, changing workflows, right? Like you need to be able to adapt and problem solve. Those are the skill sets. And, you know, to some extent, not all of it, but that comes down to attitude, right?
Yeah. I think attitude is a big one. Right. And I think attitude starts at the top and the rest of those flow with it, depending on your attitude, right? Just personally, but you know, I think when you're looking and you're looking to hire people, I think hiring the right people, and sometimes I think that means waiting for people, right? Like not everybody is you want or that's going to be the fit for your crew is going to be immediately available within the like 2 week time frame you're looking to hire this job, right? You think about it, like, you know, you need to be flexible with that if you want to get the best people, right? Because there's plenty of people who don't want to leave jobs, don't want to leave them 2 weeks and then high and dry. People want to give a month notice, sometimes 2 months notice, especially in the sports industry where there's seasons to finish out. And I see a lot of that. I see a lot of, well, we need you here next week, you know, and it's like, that's not, you're not going to get your top person then. Maybe you will, but you're going to get lucky, right? So, you know, I think there needs to be flexibility there, especially if you're hiring and you want it to be the right person.
That seems like a good opportunity to segue to another conversation here about people and focusing on the work that gets posted online and making sure that there, as a community, that there's more support and not just like, you know, Monday morning quarterback responding and telling people their work isn't good, some of those kinds of things. So, Brock, as you alluded to earlier, I'm you know, highlighting a tweet that Daryl sent out about a couple things that he's seen in the industry, and just highlighting the fact that we're kind of all in this together and making sure that, you know, if somebody posts something that you don't have something nice to say, maybe it's best just to not say anything and move on. And, you know, I think the one thing that I always tried to talk about with my team is you don't know the resources, you don't know their limitations, and everything that went into making that. Maybe they were given a shortened time frame than what they would have liked, or some of those kinds of things too. So I just wanted to toss that out as the conversation starter here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of what I mentioned, and then Brock kind of echoed, you know, about just, you know, attitude, and that kind of has to start from the top. Like, managers have to, you know, and not even managers, just people in this industry in general, just, you know, everyone is, you know, going to have, not even make mistakes. I like, we talk about mistakes a lot. Like, it's something we talk about in interviews. You know, it's one of my favorite questions. Like, what's the biggest mistake you've made in your career, and what did you learn from it? Cause I think that's important. But like, the more important part is the learn from it, you know, part of that question. And like, you know, but it goes beyond mistakes. Like, everyone's going to have days where they're just not able to give 100%. And that's not a mistake. That just like is meeting people where they're at. And like, you know, to your point, resources, like, you know, there have been times where, you know, I've looked at a piece that I've created and I'm like, honestly, this isn't a great piece, and I missed, and like, you know, it's on me. And there are times where, you know, I've maybe made, you know, a better piece than that, but like, you know, I turned to my boss, always says, you know, turn your B stories into B plus stories, or your B stories into A minus stories. Like, you know, just because the output isn't the greatest thing, like, you don't know what the resources were they're working with, their time frame, like how long they had to work on it, like what hurdles came up in the middle of the process. So like, when we as creatives judge each other's work, like, it's a dangerous thing, because it's like, we just think of it as, usually I feel like when people, I see people critiquing other creatives' work on here, it's like from a, you know, very optimistic that, oh, they, how did they not do this or that or whatever. Like, even watching, you know, feature stories from other networks or things like that, when I watch, I try and remember, like, you know, I say to myself, like, oh, how did they not get that interview? Like, this would have been natural. And I'm like, well, they probably asked. Like, you know, they probably, yeah, like, they probably thought, if I'm thinking of that, they probably thought of that. Like, it doesn't mean that they, like, made a crappy piece. Like, they might have made the best piece they could. They might have taken, you know, 10 swings at interviews or, like, footage or whatever, and couldn't get it, couldn't make it work budget-wise, whatever. Like, I don't know if their budget's 10,000 per piece or if it's 100,000 per piece. Like, you know, it just, you always look at it differently when you're in the industry, and we're awfully hard on each other. And I think that comes, you know, I talk about it broadly as an industry, but I think it's important to talk about too. Like, you know, I think Daryl's tweet was more even about, you know, within teams, within management structures, that just like remembering that, you know, not everyone's going to hit a home run every swing. Like, you just, you got to take care of your people. You got to, you know, avoid the negativity that on pieces that, you know, sometimes that'll, you know, we talk about teams like letting one loss, you know, snowball into another. Like, that can happen from a creative standpoint, where like, if you're beat down on a piece, like, I felt it before in positions where like, I knew I didn't do my best work, and it, like, I tried and it just wasn't the greatest, and like, I kind of got beat down for it, and like,
hey, this has to be better.
Yeah, and then like, I'm in a crappy place for the next like 2 to 3 weeks, and nothing I make then is going to be as good as it is, because like, you know, I'm struggling to bounce back from like the feedback that I got to, you know, that first piece. I mean, it just, I don't know, I'm rambling a little bit, but like, it just, I'm a StrengthsFinder guy. Like, I believe in StrengthsFinder, at least as an identification tool, for not only your strengths, but what you can work on as well and how they fit. And like, positivity is number two for me. So I believe in it very strongly. Like, I see the way it affects people and affects the world, and I'm, you know, not perfect with it myself, but like, I believe in putting positivity out there, and it being a very important thing, and the negativity that can happen in this industry, and the way that, you know, especially old school mentalities in this industry of like, you know, you see it in live trucks, especially like, you know, MFing people up and down, and like,
That's, you know, all that stuff.
It is. It is. And thankfully, like I haven't been in live trucks in a while, and you know, I have heard from people that are that doesn't exist in the same way, and that's a good thing. But like, you know, that old school mentality of this industry was like just a very hard nosed, you know, industry to some extent. And it just, it's slowly starting to change, thankfully, but it still needs work. Like, we still need to find that balance of, you know, how do we take care of people while still, you know, pumping out what needs to get done and doing it at a high level that's expected of us.
I think you cross over into a very subjective realm when you criticize a lot of creative content, right? And it is subjective. There are objective things about it, like this audio isn't clean, this video isn't white balanced properly, or there are objective things in there, right? But when people are looking for creative criticism and constructive feedback, you know, first of all, you have to be sure that person is open to it, right? And I think where I see it a lot is not so much here's this school critiquing this school openly on Twitter. I see a lot of it with, like you said, Garrett, it's here's ESPN, here's Big Ten Network, and people just they kind of hide behind this veil of like, oh, nobody quite knows who did it because it was done by ESPN or it was done by Fox or it was done by Big Ten Network, right? But even inside those, like you said, there are different divisions. You don't know how much resource they had, right? And that person is still probably on Twitter. They probably know what the issues are, right? And if they wanted constructive feedback, then they're gonna put it out there and ask for it, right? But I see that a lot of like, oh, well, this is ESPN, I'm open to criticize this thing, you know? And it's fine. I think criticizing, I think being constructive about things is helpful, you know, but I think just downright dogging something just because it was put out by the four letter network or what have you is really not fair.
Yeah. I mean, like if you look at it, there are just such broad ranges of like the shows and the features and the things that are being done at ESPN. And like that affects budget levels, that affects like where you're at in your career as far as doing it. Like, you know, you're not getting on E60 as an entry level feature producer, but like a lot of people critique some of the, like, you know, I don't want to say lower level, but like less intense features like that come from ESPN the same way they do an E60 piece. And it's like, they didn't have the budget, they didn't have the time. Like E60, like you're getting months and months and months to work on features sometimes. And you're getting like crazy budgets where you're traveling internationally, like multiple times for interviews, or like there are big budgets there. And then they're like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Like it is such a broad range, but people just lump it all in together as like, oh, ESPN did this piece. And it's like, eh, it's definitely not that simple.
Yeah. It seems like you're both highlighting that it's about running your own race kind of in a sense, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Somebody could put something out and that could be like a really good piece for them and how they're advancing in their career. And just because you see it and what you're comparing it against or something like that just changes the whole perception of how you're looking at it, right?
Well, there's a flip side to that too, where like as the producer, as the creative, like you have to have like a somewhat thick skin, like when you're in this industry. Like I'm not saying like brush off, you know, let people abuse you, let people like talk down to you, etc. Like that's not what I'm encouraging, but like you just have to, like, to your point, you have to run your own race. Like you really have to not compare yourself to others to in this industry. Like look up to people, like look at things you enjoy, like compare yourself in that way. But if you're trying to say like, you know, oh man, how come I'm not doing the level of work that they're doing? Or like, how come everyone's, you know, so critical of this and that for me, but not them. Like it just, it has a way of eating at you and like will completely steal your joy in this industry. Because like you said, it's such a subjective industry. It's an industry that like you're going to make creative decisions and you're going to learn on the fly. And like, you know, maybe the people that everyone loves are just better at putting their stuff out there than you. And so they built a brand and they're getting, you know, 3,000 likes and retweets on stuff they do, even though like, you know, your stuff may be as good or better. And you're like, why am I not getting more? Like it just, there's a million factors that go into it. And the second you start to, you know, And we've talked about it before, like just putting your worth in your job, like putting your, you know, who you are in your work, like is a scary thing. And this kind of ties hand in hand with that, where you just have to be comfortable in your skin. You have to know who you are. You have to, you know, continue to grow in that and not compare yourself to others. And the faster you're able to find your own voice in this industry and be comfortable in this, like the easier life's going to be, in my experience.
I think the flip side of that is, yes, I agree with all that, but you also need to seek out that constructive criticism on your pieces, right? And I think seeking that out from someone you respect, or from pieces you like, or want to, you know, want to take inspiration from is a good way to do that, because it can be very easy to sit in your own bubble and think what you're doing is great. And it may be great to an extent, but you're not growing as a creative or as a storyteller or as an editor or what have you. You know, you have to be in a place where you are comfortable with receiving that criticism and from whom you want to receive it with. Like, you may not care about somebody's criticism. They may not be doing work similar to yours, or they may not be doing work with similar resources to yours. They may have way more, they may have way less, you know, and it's different because everybody's scenario is different. But I think it's important to accept and internalize constructive criticism, because it's very easy to live inside your own bubble and think what you're doing is great, 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 when in reality you're not growing.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that's why, like, things like this and things like, you know, the Slack group, things like, you just, I mean, all the networking, like, I'll hammer it until the end of time, but like, that's why that stuff matters. You have to find peer groups. Like, you have to, like, find people that you can trust to have that, you know, critique that you can ask, like, can you look this over? What do you think of this? What would you do different? How could you do better? So you're not getting the feedback from, you know, Joe, that you've never met before, that, you know, doesn't do stuff at the same level as you. You know, you need to have peer groups. You need to have friends in the industry, and like, networking is a huge part of that. And I think it's something that I'll hammer every single episode, if you guys will let me, because I think it's so important. Like, I missed you
on one of the last ones that I highlighted. If Garrett was here, he would talk about networking. He would appreciate this conversation.
I would. I 100% would. Like, people just look at it as like, you know, networking to get your next job. And it's not. Like, it is so, so much more than that. Like, it just is. Like, you need peer groups. You need, like, people that you can talk to. I mean, like, you guys, like, I would go insane, I think, without being able to do this podcast and just chat with you guys about what the hell's going on in our lives. Like, sometimes this industry is hard and it sucks. And, like, you know, we need people that understand that and what we're going through. And, you know, not everyone has friends in the industry, or people have friends in outside of the industry that maybe you talk to about a million things, but, like, they're not going to understand the specific struggles. Like, networking is more than finding your next job. That's all. That's all I got. I'm done. Get off my soapbox. But, like, network.
Yeah, I don't think I've mentioned this on here, but Weston Carter was probably the best thing that happened to me when I was at Illinois. He was somebody that was at my level who would do something, and I would want to compete with him, not in like a me versus him way, but like in a way that was like, oh, well, he did that. Well, what am I doing? Like, in a healthy way, we kind of help push each other. And so you need to have somebody that's at the same level as you, who is doing stuff that you go, whoa, how'd you do that? Show me how you did that. And then you can kind of like help each other level up, in a sense. But, and then kind of what you were talking about, Garrett, with the, like almost mentoring, you need somebody who's going to help you make it better. And maybe that's like, when I look at feedback or talk to people about feedback, it's how can you make it better for the next time? Like, this is, I think we get too hyper focused on an output in the industry, as opposed to your process or how you can level up for the next time. I think the reason why a lot of people don't love the feedback or take the feedback, especially from social media, is it doesn't necessarily help them for the next time. And it's just, something that you get for this one piece, and it's like, okay, all right, thanks. And then you move on. And so I think, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit more about how to give good feedback or some of those kinds of things. But I feel like I've seen those a lot. And that's what I try and approach with feedback is highlight the good parts. And then what's going to help make you better for going forward, not just this specific video, which can still happen, right? You can still give feedback for this one specific output, but it's a single output, and you have to weigh that in the greater context of what you're working on. And that's going to be different for everybody, right? I think that's maybe why this is hard to talk about, because, you know, different people have a video that they, you know, they produce 6 or 7 videos in a week, and some people produce, like Garrett produces one video, like, or 2 videos in a year, you know?
I'm definitely producing more than that, just so we're clear.
I'm kidding. No, I had to throw the Twitter hate at you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I wanted to just leave this podcast right there on the spot. But it is. I mean, I think that, and I ideally that does come from your boss, your manager, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that's where, in the ideal situation, you're going to get that kind of feedback. But, like, you know, to your point, A, not every boss is good at that or understands that. Like, bosses themselves are at different levels of, you know, their learning process, or, yeah, exactly. And so, like, there will be times you have to turn outside for that critique. But, like, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as managers, I think that's the goal where that comes from. But you just, to me, what I've really learned, you know, just I've been managed by, gosh, I mean, 4 different people, I guess, now are in my full-time career. And, like, everyone's been very different. And, like, both have had, all have had positives and negatives. And I just think, like, you know, I've learned that I receive, you know, feedback better. If I do hear, you know, like, tell me up front, like, what did you like about it? Like, let's start there, and then let's work our way back to the downsides. Like, let's say, like, okay, this is good. Like, I really like what you did there. Do you think we could, you know, make an adjustment to this? Do you think that a better shot here would work? Cause that one's maybe just a little far away, or just a little, like, you know, I don't think you quite hit the tone we're going for with the audio here, but, like, I really like what you did, you know, editing, you know, hitting these points on the beat. Like, I think it has to be both. Cause I think, you know, I've been around managers that were very old school, and it was just like, fix this, fix that, fix that. Okay, I'm out. Like, and it just, to your point, it's a very short term growth mentality. You're fixing that one piece. You're not fixing the long term. You know, how do I help this person grow as an employee?
I think the other interesting thing that you just touched on there was that you talked about, yes, tell me what I did well, because you're also more likely to reinforce what was done well or what was perceived to be done well, right? But then in the second part, it was feedback of, this part's not working for me. And then that puts it back on you to figure out how to, so, like, you get to go back in and you don't feel like you're getting, like, a directive that it's, you know, the piece the best, this part isn't working for me, and this, you know, maybe why, or it doesn't feel like it fits with the rest of the piece, and this is the good part over here. And so then it gives you the opportunity to go back and adjust it the way that you feel like you've invested in and understand within the piece the most. So I think that's highly important too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the, you know, I'm always loath to talk about, you know, current job, current employment, current bosses, whatever. But I think one thing that my boss does really well on feedback right now is, like, he'll talk about, you know, I like this, but, like, do we have a bite that like gets to this, or is there a way that we could, you know, talk about, you know, work this in a little bit, you know, is there a shot that's better? It's a lot of questions, to your point. And I think that's something that I really appreciate, because it gives me the opportunity then to have a discussion. It's not like, you know, change this, this doesn't work, like, you know, we need a new shot here. And there's some of that at times, but, like, it's a lot of discussion, feedback, which in a creative endeavor is important. Like, I've been, you know, in roles where it's just like, change this, fix that. Like, I don't like this, change it. And like, you know, especially depending on the level of involvement for your bosses, you know, if they haven't been working on that piece for the last, you know, week, 2 weeks, month, however long with you, and they haven't been a part of the process, and all of a sudden they come in last minute and say, you know, change all of these things in what is to some extent a, you know, subjective creative endeavor, you know, that not only hurts relationships, but it can hurt the piece because, you know, it doesn't give you room to say like, here's why I did it. Here's what I think would work better. Like, how can we talk through solutions to these issues that you have with the piece?
It has a domino effect sometimes too, if you move something or take something out. I like also that you talked about, I don't like this. I've faced that too. And Jess talked about that in the last episode too. I like to say, if you say, I don't like it, you have no more say, because at the end of the day, it doesn't help anybody by you saying you don't like something. Who does that help? It makes you feel good about yourself that you're tearing something down, I guess, in the moment, but it just doesn't help anything.
When it's just such an easy fix, right? Like, it's so much, you're saying basically the same thing if you say, like, I'm not sure this works, what other options do we have? Like, you know, I'm not sure, you know, do you think we could move something around here? Like, you're saying the same thing, basically, that like, you're not in love with what's there currently. But like, the tiniest little thing, like saying it that way and approaching it that way, creates a completely different atmosphere within that working relationship. Then like, it's such a simple fix, and it can also be hard because you're trying to change like entrenched mentalities, entrenched personalities at times to do that. And like, I understand as a manager, it's hard to like change your style, change your personality for like your varied employees who take criticism and like want feedback in different ways. Like, you know, I've managed plenty of people in my time. Like, I know that that's not an easy thing to do as a manager either, but it really does come down to like just finding better ways to say things and better ways to approach things while still getting the same point across, like, can completely change, you know, that the output in the working relationship.
Yeah. When I went on a shoot with School of Motion, came up here when they were doing their VFX for motion class and shot a bunch of blue screen, green screen stuff for that class. And being around some of the grips and hearing some of their verbiage, I hadn't really been exposed to that. And one thing that they did often, especially with lighting, was, can we audition this? Which I thought was kind of an interesting take. It's, can we audition that light over here? Or can we audition, like, can we test it, essentially, is what they were saying, right? In an interesting way. So it wasn't like a, well, I've seen this enough times, this is how it's going to work, you're going to do it this way. It's a, hey, can we see, test this and see if it works? And maybe it doesn't. And then, you know, you at least tried it. So is there anything we want to end on?
Basically, for me, I just think it kind of comes back to, you know, finding ways to, you know, both as an employee and as a manager, to like be adaptable and constantly learn and constantly be willing to grow and know that it's not going to happen overnight. Right. Like, I think that's what a lot of this comes down to, in my opinion, because it's, you know, you need as a manager to grow as a manager, right? And you need people to put you in a position to do well and learn how to manage, because it's a completely separate skill set from being a creative, you know? So if you've been in the creative role your whole career and you get elevated, like, all of a sudden you are learning a completely new skill set than you've had as a creative. So managing people is like something you need to learn. So like, you know, there needs to be, you know, people helping the managers and the bosses grow and learn. And like, as an employee, you've got to have some grace and understanding that like your managers and your bosses aren't going to be perfect. And you need to be able to communicate, like, you know, to them when, and hopefully there's that trust built that you can do this, because that's important too. But like, you need to be able to communicate up that, hey, like, the way that you gave me that feedback, the way that these things happen, like, you know, I didn't really receive it well. I didn't, you know, is there any way that we could, you know, talk through it a different way or something? Like, that's important. But like as a, you know, so as an employee, you've got to be able to have an open channel with your manager, and a good manager will understand that. And, you know, a bad manager loses employees for that very reason. But like, it's just, you know, you've got to be adaptable as an employee too, where, you know, if a manager gives you feedback, like, how can you learn and grow from it? You've got to like have a thick enough skin to understand that like it's not personal, you know, take it. And if it's just put out there in a constructive way, like don't take it personal. I don't know.
I hate everything I just said. I just want to take it all back. I'm just fucking talking out of my ass at this point.
The beauty of editing, you can. I know.
It's so good.
I was going to say, that's like the perfect ending right there.
just right there. Just stop. This is the end of the show.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.